everybody, and welcome to episode 74 of the Bookcast. Today, we'll be having an intimate podcast because we've only got two people on it. So it's just me, James, and Stephen, or Ninja Catfish.
Hello.
Okay, so we'll start off with the news as quick as possible, because we're probably going to have a really short podcast this week. To start off with, Nintendo have confirmed that they will be attending PAX Australia. This is good news because they're the first publisher to be announced that actually makes video games, which is always good for something like PAX.
Pretty nice.
So they've confirmed that they're going to be showing both Wii U and 3DS titles, which is good because it's just before E3. I mean, I don't
just
think...
Just after E3.
Oh, really? Oh, yes. No, it is. Yeah. It's just after E3. So you were getting a lot of the runoff from E3, which is good. So, I mean, I don't think anyone expects anything new to be announced exclusively at PAX Australia. But at least most people who go will be able to get their hands on the stuff that most people at E3 will be able to play.
Yeah, and I mean, if we get our hands on the demos that were at E3 or even just some of them, that's kind of exciting.
Yes, and it's considerably cheaper than flying to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah, so pretty good news. Nintendo didn't even confirm that they're going to the EB Expo yet, so I guess PAX have got something good so far, and surprised me, personally.
Did they go to previous EB Expos?
If I recall, there was something, they went to the last one, which was just before the Wii U coming out, but they didn't bring anything at Wii U. I don't know if you remember or not, but I remember being really annoyed or angry about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's all I know. So they do attend, I think, but I don't know. Nintendo seems to be scaling back a lot of things that they're doing now, so...
Hopefully with this one being just after E3, they'll put a little bit more effort into it. They'll have more to actually show, whereas at EB Expo, they'll probably just, you know, didn't have much. They just were kind of there as a presence.
That's true, yeah. Because most of the stuff they will be getting is just, you know, stuff that's already been prepared for E3. But yeah, still good. Anyone who really wants to go to PAX now, you probably can't. As far as I'm aware, it's all sold out.
Good luck finding a ticket on eBay. They go for a mint.
Yeah, so should have gone earlier, but like me, potentially. But yeah, so Nintendo will be going to PAX, which is good. So anyone who has bought a ticket, you made the right choice, apparently. The next piece of news is that Game & Wario, which is a Wii U game that I honestly don't know much about, it will be hitting Australia on June 29th, so that's a little over, probably almost 2 months away. Good news, I guess, because we're getting more games for Wii U. Bad news, because it's literally going to be 2 months until we get something.
Yeah, I guess one kind of good thing is it's only, you know, we're only getting it one day after Europe, so we don't have a giant delay, so...
Yeah.
It is still 2 months away, but you've got to look for the positives.
Yes. Yeah.
These few positives that we get.
We seem to balance each other out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed Smooth Moves on the Wii. That was a really fun game to play with friends.
That was stupid good fun, squatting with a Wii remote on your head.
Like, and it was especially good because, like, you know, your friends didn't really know what to expect. They just thought it was, like, you know, some kind of Wii Sports thing. So hopefully, having a look at Game & Wario, it does look similar, but hopefully it has that, you know, the same feel to it and stuff. So... Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
There are games coming out between now and then, obviously, for Wii U. Sniper Elite, Lego Batman 2, which are both ports, plus Resident Evil Revelations. But this is probably the first Nintendo game for the Wii U since when?
Have they released much since
launch
day? I guess
Lego, they published Lego City in March, but...
Like, guess that could count you want it to.
Yeah, like before that, what else? It's been ages. But they had, it's really bizarre. But I mean, it's kind of the start, or hopefully it's the start of them starting to pick things back up.
Yeah, like they've previously, like they like explained the delays and everything just because, oh, we're not used to HD development. It's taking longer than we expected. Now they've worked that out. Hopefully they'll, I don't know, be more realistic and have stuff out in reasonable time frames.
It's almost like they're just relaunching the console in the second half of this year.
And this is very reminiscent of the 3DS.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm not really sure what's going to happen. But yeah, it's good. At least games are starting to be finished and come out.
Yes.
And I mean, the art style of Wario, if it is truly HD, will be really, really, really pretty too, so.
Definitely. I mean, that stuff was pretty enough back in standard def, so putting that at high def is going to be nice.
Yeah, so Game Wario will be hitting Australia on June 29th. Speaking of Nintendo not publishing games, Nintendo Australia confirmed that literally today, as we record, that Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge for the Wii U is actually being released. However, it's only being released on the eShop. This, for anyone who doesn't know, Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge was originally a Wii U exclusive. It was basically Ninja Gaiden 3 with all the extra stuff that should have been in Ninja Gaiden 3, but only for the Wii U. It came out as a launch title for America, eventually came out in Europe, never came out in Australia, was the first game ever to be classified R in Australia, and Nintendo Australia never released it. Well, they did release it, obviously, but they never they never released it quick enough. Then it came out on Xbox and PlayStation 3, the new version, came out, was announced and came out before Nintendo released the Wii U version here, and now we're finally seeing it on the eShop. Yes.
Such a missed opportunity. I mean, if, A, they had the first R18 game, so that could have been, you know, a really huge thing for Nintendo. And B, like, people were fairly disappointed in Ninja Gaiden 3 itself, and it might have gotten a few of those people to buy, you know, to either get a Wii U or to get the Wii U version of, you know, that I'm sure people really wanted to like Ninja Gaiden 3, and this would be a way for them to enjoy it. But no, it's eShop only.
Yeah, and so
late.
You can only buy it through the eShop. It is priced at $79.95. How much was like a game like Mario priced? I can't remember. Was it $89?
I think they're pretty similar, like either $79 or $89. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I've seen someone there for $99, which is kind of nuts.
Yeah, so it's pretty, it's reasonable. The game has multiplayer and stuff, which is, so it has a little bit of longevity to it. So it's, I mean, it's nice that they released it, I guess, for the people who really want it, but I just feel like This is a game that you could put on the shelves, and even if it weren't that good, that it would give you the idea that, like, the Wii U kind of had those adult games, because it is R. It is a Ninja Gaiden game, which is a series that everyone, not everyone, but, you know, that has a little bit of brand recognition in the market.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that the previous Ninja Gaiden games were on the 360 and PS3, if now that it's out on all three consoles, people aren't going to bother buying a Wii U for Ninja Gaiden Razor's Edge, whereas they might have if it was an exclusive platform for 6 months. So,
yeah,
bit of and a shame. But at least it's out.
That's the other thing. The other thing to think about maybe as well is, like, with Ninja Gaiden 3, it's an R18 game. I don't know if they're allowed to release it. Actually, they must be, but I'm not sure. Maybe they're not allowed to. They weren't allowed to release it because the Wii U couldn't filter R ratings properly in Australia, and that was. And I don't know if you remember, but last podcast we discussed that was finally done, like with the new update.
Yeah, that was part of the last update, I think. Yeah,
so maybe that's what took them so long. But then I'm not sure. I'm not sure the legality of it all. But that might be a reason. But even then, I don't know.
Yeah, because, I mean, people did have trouble. I'd heard at least reports of people having trouble playing import versions on Australian Wii Us without making a UK account, so that could be due to us not having...
Oh, true.
It probably would have seen the rating on the disc and just freaked out and not wanted to play it.
Yeah, that's also possible. But, yeah, so at least it's out now. You can buy it on eShop. It's eShop only. You can buy it now. It's literally...
Go for it.
Hopefully you enjoy it. We'll be talking about it later on. And speaking of the eShop, Mighty Switch Force HD has been announced to be coming to both Australia and New Zealand soon. It's kind of like the same thing as what happened with Trine 2. Even though it took so long here, they're releasing a big update for Mighty Switch Force HD. And when that update comes out, we'll get the full game plus the update. If any of you have played on 3DS, we know what to expect. It's made by WayForward, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a way forward game. Yeah,
so basically the update fixes a few glitches and stuff, but it also adds a new playable character. So this is a game that I know nothing about it, but I know everyone is always talking about why it hasn't appeared on the Australian eShop. Given that it's way forward, I'm surprised they're even bothering to bring it here because they seem to snub us almost all the time.
Seems that way. I mean, I've heard a lot of people really, really liked the game on 3DS, and I've I've been holding off on buying the 3DS version, knowing that there's an HD version out there.
Yeah.
I'll probably be picking this up now that it's coming to Australia. I just couldn't be stuffed making a UK account. I'm not going to bother with that.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that as well. But so it's been out, like, to give you an idea, it's been out since November, and we haven't had any word on whether or not it's coming out here since then in America, and that's in America and Europe. So it's like almost everywhere has it except us. And there's really no reason besides classification, probably.
Yeah, and I think it's just classification costs. It costs way too much. Probably, well, I imagine it would cost enough to make them think it's not really worth classifying, because they wouldn't expect it to sell that many copies, I would guess. I don't know. Yeah. Something must have changed.
But at least it's coming eventually.
Yes.
They haven't given us a solid date, but once we know, you'll know.
Yes.
The next piece of news, we're moving away now from Australian news, and this is more of an international kind of thing. If anyone remembers Eternal Darkness, probably one of my favouritest GameCube games ever. I don't know how much it's stood up to the test of time, but I still love it.
It's still pretty good. I mean, I've went through and played it pretty recently. It's stupidly easy because I'd already finished it like 5 times, but yeah, I think it still holds up.
I finished that game 4 times, and I think that's at least 20 hours of gameplay. And that was a big deal when I was little.
It was so good. Buy that game if you haven't got it already, everyone.
But the reason we're talking about this is because there's a new studio named Precursor Games. They're a Canadian studio, much like Silicon Knights, who made Eternal Darkness work. They've announced that they're working on a game called Shadow of the Eternals. You don't have to be really that smart to realize that Eternal Darkness and Shadow of the Eternals, there's a lot of... It's very...
similarities.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, I think in all accounts, this is going to be a sequel as much as it can be without being sued. Which doesn't make sense to me, because Silicon Knights are dead now, so I don't know why. And I don't think...
Well, apparently, I was just actually reading a bit of an article on Polygon, and apparently they're still active. They're not really doing anything, but they still exist. So they might as well be dead, but they're technically not, apparently.
Oh, okay. So anyway, so the game, it's called Shadow of the Eternals. It's going to be episodic. So basically, when you think about it, Eternal Darkness was an episodic game.
Yeah, when they mentioned it was episodic, I was thinking, I don't really want a Sam and Max Eternal Darkness, but thinking about it, that's what Eternal Darkness was. It was just a whole heap, and it's really good because it lets you have different characters, different time periods. I don't know if they'll do the same thing, but yeah, it could definitely work.
And I'm pretty sure they are doing the same thing. It's basically you'll have a main storyline and then all these minor things that will lead back to it. Which is good, because it was a really good way to tell a story in Eternal Darkness, if I remember right.
And I mean, it hadn't really been done before, and thinking about it, I can't think of any major times it's been done again where they've had the multiple, like, it was probably all about 8 or 9 stories all just melding into one.
Yeah. So basically what Precursor Games are doing is they're crowdfunding it, which basically means it's just like Kickstarter, so everyone who wants it pledges money towards it. Once they get the money, you get benefits for pledging the money, and they release the game, obviously. Thing is, though, they want $1.5 million to fund it. So, it's a lot of money.
it's a pretty lofty goal.
The only reason I give them that benefit of the doubt is because I do think that they would be in a lot of financial trouble if they are a lot of Silicon Knights staff. Ever since they were sued into oblivion by Epic. If anyone doesn't know, they were sued by Epic Games because Silicon Knights tried to sue Epic Games. And they countersued and won. So.
Yeah, because Silicon Knights were using the Unreal Engine without technically licensing it. And
it was a
bit big for their boots, basically.
It was so messy, but regardless.
I think that's probably why they've made a new studio. They just, like, kept Silicon Knights off to the side, took all the main people, apparently took all their equipment, and it's like, we're not Silicon Knights anymore, you can't sue us.
Yeah, maybe that's what they did. Because the person who's chief creative officer is the same person who was the former president of Silicon Knights. So it's a lot of the same talent working on it. There are a lot of rumours that this game was actually Eternal Darkness 2, but they had to change it because they just couldn't get approval to make a sequel or whatever. If anyone was following the Silicon Knights stuff that was happening when they were in trouble, there were rumors that they were working on Eternal Darkness 2, or what this game is now. While they were working on Two Human and X-Men Destiny, which are the two games that really, like, ran them into the ground, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's why those games were bad, because they were putting a lot of effort into Eternal Darkness 2, or whatever this was. And, yeah, so $1.5 million is a lot of money. There is a trailer that you can see to see where they're coming from. It does use a lot of assets from the original game. Not the same assets, obviously. But it does feel very reminiscent, so I don't know if the trailer is what they've made or something like just a proof of concept they put together. But it is running on CryEngine 3, which runs Crysis and stuff, which is interesting because the game is coming to Wii U and PC, so they must have got it running on Wii U, but then again, I'm not sure if it actually is just a PC video with Wii U buttons laid over the top.
Yeah, that's it. You never really know, but I mean, they are going to have it running on the Wii U, whether it looks as good as the trailer is. Well, trailers might not even be actual game footage anyway, yeah. Who knows at this point, but it is coming to the Wii U. It's a game, and it is a spiritual sequel to a very fantastic game. So yeah, with any luck, it should be anywhere near as good.
I think this is going to be a sequel in everything except name.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that idea. I mean, Shadow of the Eternal sounds a lot better than Eternal Darkness 2 to me.
Yeah, it does. The best thing is, I like the way that they wanted, the reason they're doing episodic as well is because they can release the first episode, take feedback from that, and then apply it to future episodes, which I think is quite good, assuming they get the money. The $1.5 million, a lot of that is going to be licensing fees and stuff, especially to use, I'm assuming they're going to license the CryEngine, obviously, because I don't think they're meant to be using it yet.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't want to go into that.
Make the same mistake twice.
Yeah, get sued by Crytek,
yeah.
Crytek, yeah.
And the first episode, if it does get funded, is basically you play as, I don't know if anyone knows about the Blood Countess. Her name is Elizabeth Bathory or something. This is apparently it's a true story. She used to, like, hunt down young women, like, kill them, bleed them dry, bathe in their blood, and it would keep her, let her stay young forever. And, basically you play as one of the girls who is one of her lovers, and it's, can't remember exactly what happens, but you basically are exploring the castle, her castle and stuff, and I'm assuming it's scary and stuff, so. Yeah, so they're basically going to be into, like, weaving it in with real history or, like, real folklore or myths and urban legends and stuff, so it's not going to just be completely made up stories, which I think is good.
Yeah, that was one of the best parts of Eternal Darkness, how it kind of tied into, very loosely, but into past actual history. It made it feel all the more real and tangible. Yeah.
I am still not 100% sure if I'm going to give any money to this. I would love to, but it's weird because I just don't know. That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I'd buy it day one becomes a thing, but I'm not sure it exactly that, you know, what happens if they don't meet the goal. Are they just going to go with it? I don't think it's got quite as much, like, stringent rules as Kickstarter, and even that's kind of exploitable. So, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I'm a huge Eternal Darkness fan, so I'm hoping this will be the follow-up that I've been waiting for since 2002. But we'll see what happens, I guess. It is a lofty goal, and I'm really worried that they won't meet it, but we'll see what happens, so. You can donate on the Precursor Games website. Just Google it. I'm not 100% sure what their website is. There is a trailer on IGN as well, and on our site, obviously, too. So, yeah. Donate if you like the look of it.
Yes.
The next piece of news is that Sega have announced that they're doing three games for their 3D Classics series. Basically, as far as I can see, it's just like Nintendo was doing them. You know, get an old game, make it 3D, and, you know, put it up on the eShop. It's incredibly... Yeah. I don't know if you have ever looked into the process for it, Steve, but it's ridiculously hard. I'm surprised people bother to do it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be an easy thing. You'd be going back into, like, 20-year-old code, trying to extract different parts and put them on different layers. It'd be...
Yeah,
it'd be pretty intense, I can imagine.
From what I have seen, like, from a few people who have, like, tried to do it, it's very arduous. So, I'm not sure why people bother, but I'm glad they do. that's the thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I mean... Yeah, like, it's... Yeah, it seems like a hell of a lot of effort for people to go to, but I'm definitely giving them my $6 when it happens.
The, first two they Sega announced were Space Harrier, which is quite popular with a lot of people who played at the arcades. I don't even remember what it is, but
yeah, a bit before my time, but you just, from what I've seen, you're a man shooting in, you go forward into the screen. It was like a 3D game before 3D was a thing.
If anyone's played Bayonetta, the scenes where Bayonetta is on a rocket flying forward, that's pretty much Space Harrier from what people have told me. Yeah. So, and they did that on purpose because it was a Sega thing. On top of that is Hang On, which we decided was a racing game before this, yeah?
It looks to be a motorbike racing game. It looks kind of visually similar to that one you'll see in the arcades with the motorbikes that you lean left and right on, but I don't really know much more than that.
The other one that they announced was Sonic the Hedgehog. So we all know that this is the one that everyone's been looking forward to the most because it's a game that everyone's played. It's a game everyone's played in all regions. And basically they're giving you a 3D effect so you can give it depth or pop out because there's two viewing modes, so that you can basically have a normal screen or a CRT screen kind of replication thing.
That's kind of nice too. I think that's even sort of one step further than Nintendo have gone with their 3D classics, because they've done the whole 3D thing, but I don't remember them doing any, like, make it look like a CRT or any other retro
things. Yeah, they haven't.
So that's kind of neat.
I guess it's just to, add to the whole type retro feel of things.
Yeah.
On top of that, you can turn the spin dash on and off, you can select your stages, customize your controls, and you can also save anywhere. So
interesting that they're putting the spin dash in it, because from memory, that wasn't actually in the first Sonic game.
I guess, if they're going to be deconstructing the game to make it 3D anyway, they thought, why not just add that? Because I'm sure programming-wise, it doesn't take that much to add it.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't imagine so. And, like, every time I go back and play Sonic the Hedgehog, I miss that spin dash because it's been in every Sonic game that I've ever played except for that one, and it's really annoying. So, yeah, it would be kind of nice to have it back.
The game is basically going to be out in Japan next week. So, yeah. But it's important to note that Sega has not released any of their 3D classics here in Australia, but they have been classified. So, they might come out.
So, cross your fingers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why Sega would pay all that money to classify them and then not release them.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially with Sonic, that's a guaranteed moneymaker. And even the other two, there's some dedicated Sega fans that have, I'm sure people have really wanted another version of Hang-On for years.
It's just a weird name.
Yeah. I know there are actually people that really do want it, though, so they're out there.
We don't know when it's coming out here. I'm sure it will, but it's just going to take a while. Moving to the even bigger picture now, Miyamoto and Reggie have both announced that they're going to host the Wii U Software Showcase at E3 2013. The official title, which I hate saying, is Come Play With Us. Basically, it's going to be Miyamoto and Reggie. They're going to be just speaking at... It's kind of like their press conference, but not really. As far as I'm aware...
Their mini press conference, kind of.
As far as I'm aware, it's going to be at Nintendo's E3 booth on the floor, and they introduce all the games there. So it's not going to be... this big announcement. I'm not really
Yeah, it won't be a big thing that we'll all be streaming. We'll just kind of see the news trickle out from games media, I guess.
I don't like this approach, but at the same time, I guess they kind of needed to because of the climate of things at the moment with the new consoles and stuff from the competitors. It's also very possible that they'll do a Nintendo Direct leading up to it as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They did mention they will be, but I don't know if people misinterpreted that to be for E3 or after E3 or something, but we'll see what happens.
Yes.
Does it happen on the day? I don't know if it actually happens during E3 or before E3, but I think it would have to happen during if they're doing it on the floor.
Yeah, it's on June 11, and E3 is June 11 to 13, so yeah, it's on day one of E3. So
I guess it's kind of... It's good if Nintendo has all the stuff to show off, which I'm assuming they do because they're doing this. It's good.
They've got something. They've said they've got a bunch of Wii U stuff, but exactly what it is, we'll only find out.
Yeah,
then,
there's not really much more we can say about it. I mean, we've talked about this for ages. No. What Nintendo are going to do this year with the Wii U and E3? So I guess that's it.
Yeah.
And then just to finish the news, EA have announced that they've made a partnership with Disney now, isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be Disney, yeah.
So, basically, they've announced that they're working with Disney, and they've acquired the rights for Star Wars titles. This could be good, this could be bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, from what they've also said, that every Star Wars game they make from now on is going to be built on EA's Frostbite, so that's the engine that powers Battlefield 3, among other things. And apparently they've tried running it on Wii U one time, like an older version. It didn't work too well, so they're just not bothering, according to some of the technical director at DICE. So, yeah, it could mean that we're not getting Star Wars games. Hopefully they put a bit of effort into it. Yeah, but, yeah.
It's a bit weird because, like, I just find, like, it's so, like, not, I don't want to say mean, but, like,
big meanies,
like,
EA.
Like, a Taylor Swift song about EA or something. But, it's just, it's annoying because, like, this is such a big thing. I think it's been a very, and EA's teams, all their development teams are really good. Like, I can't really think, I mean, everyone likes to shit on them all the time. But when you think about it, like, all the games that EA make are quite good. Like, the guys who make Dead Space, what else did they make recently? I'm just trying to think.
Mass Effect.
Mass Effect is BioWare, but I guess, imagine if they did a BioWare RPG, Star Wars, being too excited. But,
yeah, they already did that, but it was online, so no one bothered.
But maybe again, I don't know. But the thing, it's just like, I mean, I think maybe what could happen, and this is me being incredibly optimistic, is when they do a Frostbite game, they'll employ a smaller team to do, like, a different version of the game for the Wii U. As I said,
Yeah, that's pretty optimistic. It'd be nice. We'll see. Yeah, I mean, it's annoying because so many studios are just, well, I guess EA mainly, are just not bothering with the Wii U because it doesn't have a massive install base, but it's a sort of chicken-egg situation because it's not going to get a big install base when it doesn't have support from third-party developers, so it's... Yeah, fairly annoying. Yeah. We'll see.
So that's pretty much it for news. We'll be back after some music from Ninja Gaiden, which is the only game that we've both played this week. And obviously not that much, because it only just came out. But we have played it. So we'll be back after some music, and we'll get straight into gameplay. Is we don't have, obviously, with the games played, we try and keep it to the new releases or one specific game that we've all played that's seemingly relevant. Obviously, nothing has come out, so, except for Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge, and we have both, me and Steve, have both played a little bit of it prior to recording, just so that we could have something for this segment, and we might miss the opportunity in 2 weeks' time when we have another podcast. So, obviously, Ninja Gaiden Razor's Edge just came out on the eShop. It is $79.95. Basically, for anyone who doesn't know, Ninja Gaiden is an character action game, which means, basically, it's an action game, but it's more focused on the character and the moves you do rather than the spectacle and the, you know, defeating giant monsters and stuff like that. It's more about your character, the combos, and all that kind of stuff. So, something similar to Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, kind of like other Amps combat, but not really.
I guess if you really want to stretch it, yeah.
The Nintendo only games that, just in case we've got people who own Nintendo.
Yeah, it's much more of a Bayonetta, because that's coming to Wii U, and more of a Devil May Cry than it's not a God of War where everything's about how big and huge and crazy stuff is. It's more about, yeah, just your character and.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just repeating what you said, yeah. Character and combos. Right.
So basically with Razor's Edge, with the Ninja Gaiden games, the idea is that you're a ninja, obviously. And it's one of the more intense action games, at least it was, until Ninja Gaiden 3 came out. In Ninja Gaiden 3, there's no decapitations or anything. It's very very scaled back, and that's what Razor's Edge restores everything that Ninja Gaiden 3 removed. However, it still was not that. It's good, but it's not amazing. Like, it's not as good as the other. Like, Ninja Gaiden 2 is regarded by many to be one of the best games in the genre. I don't agree with that, but a lot of people do think that. It's notoriously difficult, but Ninja Gaiden 3 is not. That's another reason that a lot of people didn't like it.
Yeah, I definitely found that. I mean, I've gone through and played some of the first two, and it just destroyed me whenever I tried playing it. And I don't know if it's just because now I've got a little bit more experience with sort of action games, or whether it's just a whole lot easier, but I would just... Until the boss, I never died in Ninja Gaiden 3, and I was not expecting that.
It's very strange, because the thing is, with Razor's Edge, it's still a competent game. It's just that... I mean, I'm going to use my analogy about the house again that I used for Aliens. Like, you know, the game, it's Ninja Gaiden 3 itself, was built in to streamline the series, bring more people in, sell more. As a result, it was less difficult. There were less weapons to use, because they were like, oh, you know, don't confuse people with all this, these different weapons and stuff, just give them one sword.
Hmm.
And the story was easy to follow, but also terrible. The thing is, as I said with Aliens, is like, you know, if you've got like a bad foundation that you've built upon, there's no point doing up or like renovating a house that's built on this bad foundation, because, you know, it's still going to be on a shitty foundation. So
that's such a timeless metaphor. It just works.
But that's how I feel about Razor's Edge. Like, I know with Razor's Edge, like, they did add in all the weapons that should have been in 3 in the first place, and they did add, you know, they've added new playable characters, which I like. I always like when they do that in a game. Like, I love in Metal Gear Rising, which just came out, they're adding new characters that play differently and have different interfaces and stuff. Like, I really like it when they do that in action games especially.
Yeah, it actually sort of changes up the game enough to warrant another playthrough, and even if it costs, you know, a little bit more to get these extra characters, because it's such a different experience, it doesn't feel so bad paying for it.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, the way that they do it is it weaves the story properly. So the extra characters that you play as in the Wii U version, Razor's Edge, she has her own story, and she's got new cutscenes and stuff filmed for those scenes, which is, I mean, it's not super rare, but it's good to see. Yeah,
it's better than just dropping that character into the old cutscenes.
Like, even not even bothering with that, you know, just having no cutscenes, like making it feel like some weird fan mod that's got text dialogue or something.
Yeah, so good on them for that.
The biggest thing that I love that Razor's Edge reintroduces decapitation, and I know that sounds really weird for me to say that I love something like that.
Video games have ruined you.
It's just like, the thing is, with decapitation and stuff, like, you know, you had, with Ninja Gaiden, you could actually, like, you know, in number 2 especially, you could cut people's legs off and stuff so they couldn't run at you or something. And that would actually help you in combat if there was, like, an enemy who really relied on running or jumping or something. So I mean, to be perfectly honest, the action does move so fast that you can't really strategize to dismember people. But...
Yeah, I did found that.
But at least when you dismember someone, it's kind of like, it gives you that moment of relief from that certain enemy that might be pissing you off heaps.
It means something. It's not just something that looks, I don't want to say pretty, but that's the best word I can come up with, but it actually does have an effect on how the game plays as well.
And, I mean, the Wii U version adds in, like, I mean, it's just basically, you know, it's the usual stuff, like, you know, map, you can cast spells in the game, and so you just use the gamepad to input the spells to do them. It's just like, it's very, like, you know, run-of-the-mill stuff, but it's not...
Yeah, off-TV mode as well.
It's not bad, but, like, I mean, it could be, and it is now, a game for Xbox and PS3, and... It's reflected by the fact that it's out now on both of them. But what did you think of what you've played so far, Steve?
It's sort of, after coming from some other action games, like a Metal Gear Rising, for example, it's a lot less, I don't know, it doesn't quite have that, I guess, the strategy to it. It just kind of felt like I was mashing heavy and light attack just kind of to get through things. It was stupidly good fun, and it looks really good. It's the violence, as you say, with the decapitations, it sounds really... I don't know, angry video game person, but it's also, it adds a lot to the game. It's a really visceral, that word, experience. Like, it's really well stylized. It looks really, really good. You've got blood going everywhere, and it's really adds to the game. Like, the decapitations, I guess having those taken out, some people might relate it to having the dead body stay there in Left 4 Dead 2 or not stay there in the Australian version. It just adds something extra to the game that just makes it that much more enjoyable, I guess, if you like
bloodlust. What do you think of the story so far?
It was hard really to pay any attention to. It was just kind of there, and there was a kid there for some reason, and Yeah, it didn't really do much for me. It was just, I guess, an excuse to go to different places and slice up more bad guys for
pretty,
me.
It takes itself very seriously, and I don't think it should.
Yeah, it's a very silly story taken far too seriously.
I mean, I like how they kind of keep throwing in those little cameos from the other Dead or Alive characters. And I remember prior to the game's release, I was really into like the design of like the bad guy, the red.
The masked peck man.
I thought that was cool, and that really, I know it sounds really superficial, but that really made me want to play it to find out who this person was.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a fair enough thing to say. Characters all, you know, got an interesting enough design. That's a reason enough to play something.
I mean, I remember with Resident Evil 4, I was buying that anyway, but I really wanted to play it when I saw, like, a midget wearing a pirate hat or whatever. in a castle. Yes.
Intriguing.
I was super intrigued then. But yeah, I mean, I've finished the vanilla version of Ninja Gaiden, so I know what happens. It's pretty bad.
So you're not going to be playing this for the
story.
Don't
expect a killer story, basically, to anyone who is interested in it. It is a good game. It's just, it doesn't really, it's not one of those, like, it's just not one of those games that has, like, so much depth that, you know, you just want to keep playing it over and over again, which is what I think half of Bayonetta, Devil May Cry, and Metal Gear Rising's appeal are. There's a lot of combat depth and stuff.
I do think, though, with where you mentioned it was kind of a little bit dumbed down to a degree, I think that can be fairly good because, as I was saying, I got all the way up to the first boss and I hadn't died. And I think that someone who hasn't, you know, they're not really big on action games so far, it's something that you can play and it looks spectacular and you can just kind of mash things and you don't have to know exactly what you're doing. You can still have a good time. So
yeah,
I think
true.
As much as Ninja Gaiden fans were expecting this pinnacle of difficulty game, I think they kind of lost out on it, but I do think that if people wanted to give the series a try, this is a reasonable entry point because it's, you know, not frustratingly controller-throwingly hard.
That's true. The only thing, like, my issue is with it really is like, I mean, this is a game that's renowned for being very technical and hard, and I think that it's probably the worst game to try and dumb down because, you know, the fans are quite rabid, so...
yes.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not hugely angry about it because I don't have that much. Like, I do like Ninja Gaiden, but I don't care about it as much as other people do. But yeah, the other thing that Razor's Edge adds is there's a lot of new weapons, which are actually just weapons from the old games that most people expected to show up but didn't. So there's the staff, there's dual katanas and the Kusari Gama, which is basically like a scythe and a weight. It's very hard to explain, but if you played Ninja Gaiden 2, you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I remember seeing that.
So, I mean, it's cool because, like, you know, you've got new weapons to play around with, but the combat system still isn't that, what's the word?
It's fairly shallow, from what I could understand. Like, it seemed to be a lot of just hitting people until you have your meter high enough to cast that Ninpo magic, which was really nice and pretty. You got fire dragons going all over the place, but it didn't seem like there was much more depth to it, but I'd only played about 3 or 4 hours of it, so I don't know if it gets much deeper than that.
Yeah. I like what they've, as I said, like, you know, you keep adding stuff to Ninja Gaiden 3, but I think overall it's designed rather poorly compared to previous games.
Do you think that the extra weapons add an extra layer of depth to the combat, is it just kind of...
To me, for that to happen, they would have to have, each weapon would have to have different things. Like, for example, they would have to have, all the weapons do have different speeds, but then the enemies aren't geared to be, the enemies are all kind of similar in, and, you know, they're all, this is the thing, the enemies are all balanced around having that one weapon in the original game. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, so it doesn't really rebalance the game to encourage you to use the other weapons.
Exactly. So, like, that's what I mean. Like, you know, you're kind of putting a band-aid over, like, a gaping wound. Like, it's not...
These metaphors are great.
But that's what I... Do you know what I mean? Like, it kind of helps, but not really.
It kind of adds a bit of superficial depth to it, but without actually changing the underlying foundation of the combat house.
But the stuff that's made for the game is pretty good. I say that with some reservation, but for anyone who doesn't know, the Razor's Edge also allows you to play as Ayane, who's from Dead or Alive and some of the older Ninja Gaiden games as well. Basically, you can play as her, and she has her own unique set of moves. And she's a little bit more better developed as a character in terms of, like, her moveset and stuff. She's got more options and her enemies are kind of differently geared, which is good. But on top of that, you can also download 2 DLC characters to be used. Plus, you can also use Ayane in any level in the game if you want. She does have her own story moments, obviously, during Razor's Edge. But you can also play as her at any point, which is good. Neither of us got to that point, so we can't really talk about it that much. But that's something good that they've added, I guess. I'm not sure if the DLC is up yet, because it is free, but I don't know if Nintendo put it up for the Australian eStore, but we'll have to check, I guess. We can't, but we'll have to.
Since you'll be going to the eShop to get the game anyway, it's just a one click away to check, I guess.
I can't believe I didn't even think about the DLC. But the DLC will add 2 new characters as well, so it's pretty good. Each with their own movesets as well, so it's not just like, you know, reskins or anything.
Yeah, no, that's good. They've at least put some effort into that DLC.
That thing was, they were really just developing the free DLC to be added to the disc release for the Xbox and PS3, really. But, I mean, there may be a review. I'm not sure if I'm going to get in time. It's not a terrible game, but it's not an amazing game. Like, it's not the game that everyone's going to be like, oh, the Wii U is saved or whatever. It's just...
No. But, I mean, if you've actually been holding out for an HD console until Nintendo did one, and I know there's more than one person out there who's done that, like, it's not a bad game. Like, if you buy this, you probably will have fun with it, especially if you're not really experienced with previous Ninja Gaiden games. You don't go in with that preconception of it being, you know, being a certain thing, and it's not, I guess, proper Ninja Gaiden, as you might say, but it's still good fun. I mean, I'd still recommend picking it up if you're starved for games on the Wii U.
Yeah, definitely. So, it's out now. You can play it. You have to download it. It won't be coming to stores.
Make sure you get a hard drive if you have a basic Wii U. That's
pretty much all that we can say about it. I do hope that maybe... I'm not sure where... that we're going to get another Ninja Gaiden game. I'm sure we will.
Of course we will.
But I don't know if it's going to be on the Wii U. It'd be nice if it was. That's the other thing that I just was reminded of just by saying Wii U. The game also does have online modes, but we get a chance to test them out. You can actually, like, tackle challenge levels made specifically for the cooperative mode together, so that's quite cool.
And I think, I might be mixing it up with something else, but does it have, like, a versus mode, or am I mixing that up with something else?
I'm pretty sure that it does have, I could be wrong, I might be getting confused with the Xbox version of like the original game, but I'm pretty sure it has like this version, like where you can, it's like, I think 4v4 battles against each other. I'm not sure if it carried over to the Wii version, but I think it is, but I'm not sure. But I do know that online co-op is the new addition to Razor's Edge. I don't think that was in the original game. So it does have multiplayer, which is quite good. So it has legs as well, I guess, if you can find people to play with quite regularly. And I'm sure it's easy to do that now with the Miiverse as well, so...
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you could just put up, hey, I want to play a game, and I'm sure you'd get someone.
So, I guess that's the only game that we've both played. I could speak briefly about LEGO City, The Chase Begins, but my review is going to be up quite soon, basically, just to go over it really quickly. It's an okay game, but it tries too much to be like the Wii U version, and it suffers technically because of it. First open world game for the 3DS as well, which I guess is kind of an achievement, but it's still quite...
By the sounds of things, they probably were a bit too ambitious for the 3DS.
I mean, I'm glad that they tried to do something a little bit different, but it's really not that different. So, yeah. we won't talk about that too much because the review is up on the full on the site, so... So that's it for games played. A little bit more music, and we'll be back. And we're back. We'll just close the podcast, which is obviously quite short, but it was an intimate podcast, as we promised. So we hope your lights are dimmed.
Mine are.
Oh, that's good, I guess. But also creepy, but that's fine. We'll quickly just talk about stuff happening on the site. Every Sunday, we're only 2 weeks in, but every Sunday, Hope is doing her weekly wrap up. So hopefully by the time, hopefully, by the time this podcast goes up, her new video will be up, which will be kind of covering the stuff that we covered in this podcast as well. Up on the virtual console this morning, Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on the Move went up on the 3DS eStore, $13. On top of that, Solomon's Key and Xevious. Both NES games, both went up on the Wii U Virtual Console as well. There's a few other things, but we won't really talk about them. But that's what's gone up on the Virtual Console this week. On top of that, Fire Emblem Awakening and Injustice Gods Among Us have both gone up for, the reviews for them have both gone up. Both done by me, both quite liked by me, especially Fire Emblem. So check them out if you want. Most of the stuff that I said in the podcast is in the review, plus more. So if you want kind of more elaborations on my thoughts from last podcast, that's probably the best place to go. On top of that, you know, the forums are still going. People are starting to get excited about Animal Crossing, which is very, which is kind of close. So if you really want a good, like a good active community for that, be sure to join the forums on www.vooks.net. It's like books, but with a V. So yeah, be sure to join up there. On top of that, obviously there's always people looking for Monster Hunter people to play with. And they're the two major games really for 3DS and Wii at the moment. On top of that, Stephen will talk about what recently happened in the exciting world of books over in Sydney.
Yes.
Literally last
night. It's very, very exciting.
Literally last night.
Yeah, that's it. Vuk went over to Sydney because, yeah, we were nominated for a bunch of awards, which is kind of awesome. There was the MCV Pacific Awards, where Vuk was, or Vuk's, the site, was nominated for Online Publication of the Year. We didn't win, but we're a finalist, so that's pretty awesome, I think. And as well as that, in the Microsoft IT Journalism Awards, I believe, we were nominated for, yeah, Best Independent Media, and, yeah, we're a finalist in that as well. So, yeah, that was pretty awesome, and... yeah, good work everyone on the team and everyone that reads and listens to us, because, yeah, you're the reason we do it.
Yes, thank you to everyone.
Very exciting.
A loyal fan. So it's good to get the recognition, I guess. But I'm glad that, you know, we also got fancy posters, and not posters, but, you know,
certificates.
Certificates put in a frame and put on his shelf.
Yeah, and I mean, in some of them, looking at the other finalists, like, we're among giant websites like IGN and Kotaku. So I think, yeah, for us, our tiny little Nintendo website up with the big boys is pretty cool.
So yeah, that's all we have for this week, this fortnight, sorry. It's, as I said, it was a short podcast. There was really not a lot to talk about, and we didn't have as many people to bounce off, so it is quite short, but I guess...
we hope you still loved us.
Yeah, we will be coming back, and as you can probably tell, we've got these on a regular schedule now, which is good. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter.
Leave us a nice review on iTunes if you like us.
Yes, especially that. And yeah, thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Bye.